This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
This is Patrick Prince, editor of Goldmine Magazine. Welcome back to the Goldmine Podcast. Today's guest will be Amy Fleischer Madden. She is the author of the book, an outstanding book, Negatives, A Photographic Archive of Emo, 1996 to 2006. Music history geeks will love this, and she defines emo in a very detailed way, in a way most authors could not, quite frankly. So anyway, we'll be back with Amy right after this.
Hello, Pantheon Podcast listeners. Christian Swain here to tell you more about my experience with Raycon earbuds. Our family now has three pairs of Raycon earbuds around the house. And my wife just grabbed a pair of the Headphone Pros to replace some headphones from a company that was double the price. And yes, she loves them. Now, if you haven't pulled the trigger on a pair of Raycons, or even if you have, but you're in the market for another pair because they're just that good, well, now is the time to check them out, because they just launched their upgraded model of the best-selling everyday earbuds. With Raycon's upgraded everyday earbuds, now you also get active noise cancellation, ergonomic design, and multi-point connectivity that lets you pair with two devices at once. New quick charge function, three customizable sound styles, plus awareness mode. Available in a variety of vibrant new colors to complement any and all skin tones. I even have a pair of earbuds in a cool green color. I have tried just about every earbud known to humankind, and these Raycons are fantastic. Seriously, if you've been wanting to check out Raycons, there truly is no better time. You're going to ask yourself why you didn't check them out sooner, and Raycon offers a 30-day happiness guarantee. So, what are you waiting for? Go to buyraycon.com/pantheon today to get 20% off your Raycon order, plus free shipping. That's right, you'll get 20% off and free shipping at buyraycon.com/pantheon. buyraycon.com/pantheon.
Message. So congratulations on the book, Negative.
Thank you.
Photographic journey as well as essays. You know, how long did it take to put together all the photographers, all the, you know, different writers, including yourself?
It really took 3 years. I started it right before 2020, and it's a longer story. It started as a documentary. And really? Okay. It morphed into the book once COVID happened, and I couldn't really do what I wanted to do with a documentary. And I was like, okay, it's a book. And I was a bit disappointed. I was excited to take a break from books. But the joke is it took 3 years, or it took 25 years, because a lot of these photos, at least the ones that I took, I've been carrying them around since I was like 17 years old. Mm. So it's been a journey, that's for sure.
You ever include some of them in your fanzine, which I want to get to?
I probably didn't. The fanzine was so, fanzine-y, and I was so young.
That's what's great about fanzines.
Yeah. There might have been a couple of photos of mine in the fanzine now that I think about it. I think the last issue of it was a South Florida band called Shai Hulud. And I remember I shot them at this like super famous venue called Churchill's. And I remember that was on the cover. And I was like so proud that it was a local band on the cover at a local venue. But yeah, very, very small things happened in the zine.
So just to get a background, you started the zine when you were 16. That's amazing. Fiddler Jones.
Yeah.
That's very cool. I respect that. I started a zine, not at 16, but right after high school. It was heavy metal, though, it was in the 80s. So yeah. I totally understand the whole vibe of wanting to capture the scene and to create this sort of community through a zine.
Yeah.
I don't think I don't even know if the zine mentality is still out there now, because it's a different, maybe it's online. But there was something great about, like you said, you would hand out zines to people at the clubs, and it was just more interpersonal, interactive, it seemed to me, when I was doing it. I would get to talk to people and hang out with people, and then, it was a way of welcoming, like a welcome or introduction to them. So I totally get the zine thing. And then it turned into a record company, which is quite amazing.
I think the zine thing, when back in that time I was promoting shows, I was booking shows, I used to call it like hand-to-hand combat, because you could walk up to somebody and engage in a conversation and hand something, either a flyer, like, please take this and like put it on your fridge or on your bulletin board, or like, here is a zine, or it's a dollar or whatever. I think sometimes I charged a dollar. But it was a very like one-to-one connection. Right. And I have to tell you, a lot of the people that I met in that era in my life are still my friends. Right. Like, randomly meeting people when I was 15 years old at different concerts, and we're still friends. I think it exists today. It's just a different iteration of it. And I think it's all digital and social, which makes me sad for the younger people coming up. But I think kids eventually do meet up when it's safe and whatnot. I hate that I have to say that. But I think people still connect. The weird thing is now people can connect on such a larger scale, but that like macro interaction is gone,
Yeah, that kind of takes away from it, right?
Yeah.
The local thing that made it so cool. Or you felt like you were part of a club, an exclusive club.
Oh yeah.
Mainstream wasn't a part of, and that's what you loved about it.
Yeah. It's like you had a secret. It's like, I'm a part of the secret club and regular people don't know about it. Like, and that's okay.
And then with the record company, that started, a year or so after the fanzine?
Yeah. A year or so after, when I was still in high school. And it just made sense to me at the time. Looking back at it now, it's like, that's crazy. but at the time, there were one or two local labels, and then there were smaller indie labels that I just, worshipped. And it was like, well, why can't I do that? I can do that. Yeah. Like, I can do that in my town. So it just seemed normal.
Well, you found out that it was more complicated than.
Okay. So
you
much.
Said that the first band, you said it flopped, but.
Oh,
It was a good experience, though.
It was a really good learning curve. And I feel there's probably some sort of like sports analogy here, where like you walk out on the field and you go to hit a home run and you just whiff, I think you have to fail a little bit. It's actually not great if you don't fail.
Right.
And, you know, in hindsight, the release was, quote unquote, a flop. But by standards of how many people actually went to shows in South Florida, like, it did great. Like, it was like, you sold 100 copies. That's a lot, you know, like maybe 50 people go to a show here and there. So 100 is a lot.
That must be collectible now. Those are the kind of usually collectible.
They are. I re-released it with the band a few years ago. My timeline's all funky from COVID brain. But it's like, I think it was pre-pandemic, and we made new artwork and we put it up digitally for the first time ever. And, you know, just so people that never even heard it could hear it.
Cool.
That was fun.
Yeah, you probably see it on eBay, the original pressing, right? I mean,
it's a very like niche, you know, like you have to know what it is to be like, you have that.
Record collectors love that though.
Yeah.
You know, speaking of genres, you know, to the uninitiated, sometimes emo is hard to define. Would you agree with that?
I think it's near impossible. I've tried to write about it, like that exact statement. Yeah. Emo is hard to define. I think I even say that in my intro to the book. The interesting thing that's happening in my world is people that I know that I'm not connected to through music are experiencing my journey with this book, with like me posting clips from the book and like bands and songs and things. And people are coming to me and they're like, I like emo and I had no idea that this is what it was, which lets me know that the like misconception stereotype version of emo that I've been fighting against basically my whole life since it became that this book is actually doing what I wanted it to do. Like, it's not a cliche pastiche thing. It's a sincere musical movement that, you know, if you have an ear, you can get into it.
Right. Now, if you go to a record store, a lot of those bands are filed under rock. But I remember in the 2000s, there was in several stores sections.
Yeah.
That would be, say, emo.
Yeah. And well, if there were even sections for emo, there was one. You know, it was a little bit touch and go there for a minute.
Explain how the book is, separated into second wave and third wave. And why you decided to do that?
Great, great question. So I feel like as the movement progressed, it got very difficult to put certain bands in the genre next to each other. Like if you put a second wave band next to like a third wave band that got much bigger and more produced and was, you know, visible on a grand scale, when you put them together, it's very apples and oranges.
Yep.
And a few people have asked why I haven't included the first wave, which is a great question too, but it wasn't my world. Like, it was before my time, and I wasn't a participant and I wasn't a fan in it, and I didn't want to tell a story that wasn't mine to tell. So I started it where I felt confident in documenting. So the second wave starts on my clock, like at the tail end of 95. So we call it 96, and it goes right up until 99, 2000. And that's when the third wave starts and the genre moves much more into a pop direction and much more into like a rock direction. Mm. And there's some bands that transcend the waves, like Jimmy Eat World is a really great example of that, where they've been a band through the entire thing. Like, they're not as early as a first wave band, but they were at the tail end of it, like with their first demos and whatnot. And if you follow them sonically, if you listen to tracks off Static Prevails, that's a second wave emo band. But then when you revisit them 5-6 years later in the third wave, they're a third wave emo band. And they've kind of eclipsed the genre where they are a major rock band. They do play these huge tours, so the DNA is still there, but I just felt like it was a really interesting way to like move the camera around and like zoom in on just different eras to get a better look at things.
Right. I could see it now that you explained it like that. It's perfect.
Oh, cool.
First wave, would you include, so would that be bands that were influential, you think, on the movement, or just now a band like, say, Helmet, would you include Helmet in there? Because they weren't really heavy metal. They were kind of like influenced by hardcore punk, but not heavy metal. It's kind of weird to, but I'm sure they influenced bands in emo.
For sure. Well, that's why emo is so hard to define, because 99% of bands, I think, other than, I was about to say boy bands, but I think they might even fall into it. Right. If you really, really like look at something, there is like particulates of the DNA that is emo. Like Blink-182, you can say they're emo. I wouldn't include them in an emo book because they have so many other attributes of like humor and punk and things like that they're not like true to the genre. But Helmet, I mean, I remember listening to Betty forever ago, and you know, when it came out, and being like, what is this? Because it was like alternative rock and heavy metal at the same time.
But it had that sort of emotional, furious quality to it, right?
Yeah, I struggled the same with Tool. Like Tool is one of those bands that's like, when you listen to Sober, that is like, that has like Sunny Day Real Estate feelings to it. But it's not emo. Like, it's really interesting. And I think some bands definitely like vacation in emo throughout their career. Right. And some bands are in it and they kind of filter outward on certain records. That's why I think it's so hard to find.
Well, you included two bands that I hold in high regard, and I never considered them emo, but when you defined it, when you put them there, it made sense. At the Drive-In, which I think were better than what they evolved into, Mars Volta. They were a really good band. I don't know why they broke up, but you said that experiencing them live was the stuff of legend. Maybe you can explain that.
So some of the bands exactly like At the Drive-In, I feel like aren't 100% an emo band, but their influence is so important in the genre that they can like hold their own weight in there. And seeing At the Drive-In was like a religious experience. And I believe they broke up. I'm not 100% sure, but I think they broke up because they just couldn't get along at a certain point. Like, certain band members just didn't gel. Oh. And which happens, it happens to the best of them and the worst of them. But At the Drive-In, the ferocity of their live show, it was dangerous. Like, it was like you might get a guitar thrown at the side of your head. And there was such just this like omnipresent swagger with Omar and Cedric that like their style was infectious. Like, you wanted to dress like them. Like, I remember the first time I saw them, they all had white belts, and I was like, where do I get a white belt? Like, why has nobody ever told me about a white belt? And then you pair that with Jim Ward, who did amazing things in At the Drive-In and with Sparta after that band, and his scream was just so amazing that it's like, it was, that band was pure lightning in a bottle.
And then there's Cursive, who I didn't get to see them live either. I wish I did. But you described them perfectly.
Oh, thank you.
After listening to them, I feel like I've been beaten up, but in a good way.
It's so brutal. But I have to tell you, I saw Cursive a couple months ago. You have to go. It's just as good now as it was then. If not better. Cursive live is something you have to experience for sure.
Or in the studio, they're like an exorcism put to music, so I can only imagine what they're like live.
It's really emotional, like, to use the worst word possible to explain it. It's really emotional. Cursive is unbelievable to see live.
But what's also great about the book, it's not just concert photos, you capture life as a musician, as an emo musician. And was it Gerard Way in the supermarket?
Right? Oh, yeah.
Of My Chemical Romance.
One of my favorite photos in the book.
He's not a glamorous vampire. He's actually
eating. He's wearing cargo shorts and a hoodie and I think New Balances, which is
so far from his image.
Yeah, but I mean it might still be, but that at the time was like the trademark tour, you know, outfit. It was like comfort, right. You know.
Yeah.
But yeah, I when that photo came in, I was just like, this is what I want to show just as much as that guy on stage, like real people in like Stranger in a Strange Land vibes.
Right.
I'm so glad that came through on your end.
Who was the guy you took a picture of someone, it was your photograph in the Badlands? Was that on tour? That was a pretty good one.
Thank you. Yeah, that was when I was on tour with Saves the Day, and it was the last, like, tour ended the day before, and we were doing a crazy drive from Seattle back to New Jersey, and the band, I can't remember if they had stopped there before or they had always wanted to. It was one of those like bucket list things. They were like, we have to stop in the Badlands and we have to listen to Bruce Springsteen's Nebraska the whole way through. And I was like, okay, let's go. Like, this sounds incredible. Like, it's like, you know, you have to take drugs and listen to Dark Side of the Moon. It was like that kind of, you know, let's do this. And we got to the Badlands at the perfect moment. Like, the sun was setting, it was golden hour, and the band members at the time of that iteration of the band were like so wonderful to be around. They were all these like meditative, contemplative, emotional grown-up men. And I just remember we got there and we all just kind of separated and did our own thing and like felt the universe and then came back to each other. Yeah, I'm really glad you like that photo. That photo is super special to me.
So thinking about the different waves and how emo is hard to define, I know you've said in the book, I think you said most people think of My Chemical Romance and Fallout Boy, right? That's mm-hmm. Okay. But so not just commercial success, not just the most popular band. How would you define an artist that perfectly captured emo and sound, not just the most like the most popular person in high school, you know?
Yeah.
Who did it right in your eyes? Who did
the most quintessential emo band?
Yes.
A part of me wants to say it's Sunny Day Real Estate, but then a very truthful other part of me, for me, I want to say it's Mineral. Some people don't like both of those bands. Some people are like column A or column B, but not both.
Right.
For me, those early Mineral records are just like, they just destroy you. Like, it's so good. But it's interesting because I feel like I can pick songs that can answer that question. And then I can pick bands that are not the same as the songs. And then I can pick albums. Like, because I can say, okay, it's American Football, Never Meant, that song. Or I could say it's Jawbreaker's Dear You album as a whole. Or I could say What It Is Like to See Cursive or Mineral live. Like, it's so many ways to answer it.
Right. No, that's a good introductory kind of, if you wanted people to get into emo, right?
Yes.
Instead of the mainstream way.
Yeah.
Okay. So finally, what's next for you? Are you doing? Many people don't know. I think aren't you a novelist as well?
I am.
Director. You know.
I have two other projects that I've been working on throughout this the entire time, and it's kind of like in the theater how you don't say good luck, you say like break a leg. Like, I'm learning in book world, at least for me, it's super helpful if I don't talk about projects until they're almost ready to come out into the world, like, because you never know what's going to happen with them. But I have two more book projects in the works. I don't know which will happen first or if things will shift and it'll be a different thing that I didn't even know existed yet that comes out before the other two. Mm-hmm. I'm kind of feeling that I have to really pay attention to like signals that are given to me, like this is going to be the next thing. I can see it. It's coming. Okay. I have to push on that. Cause I do this thing where I work on too many things at the same time.
Yeah.
It's very like jazz and or ADHD, whichever you want to call it. But, my brain is just like always going. So, but something will be next. I don't know exactly what yet.
And you know, projects, they start out as one idea and then they evolve. And you brought that to our attention with how Negatives started out as a documentary idea.
Exactly. Yeah.
So as far as doing documentaries, is that always a box you want to finally check as a goal? Like, is that
I would love to. I am a film and television nut.
You can do some on the Badlands.
Oh my gosh.
Listening to the album.
Oh my gosh.
The album continuously, Nebraska.
I mean, that's a short film right there.
Yeah, so, exactly.
Yeah, no, I went to film school. I love everything visual. I would love to be in a visual space like that one day for sure.
This depends on the right time, right?
Right time. And what I'm learning most is like the right team, like yeah. Who you do it with. Yeah.
True. That's true.
Yeah.
Films and documentaries are more of a team project. Yeah.
People massive collaboration.
Don't really think about it that way sometimes. They give so much to the filmmaker, but you know, especially with documentaries, but there's so much going on.
So much.
Thank you so much for taking the time to talk to Goldmine.
Oh, this was such a treat. Thank you so much for really digging into the book. I love speaking with you.
Again, congratulations.
Thank you.
I mean, like I said, you said it took 3 years. That's quite an accomplishment. Anyway, yeah. I'll talk to you soon, all right?
Sounds good. Keep in touch.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more fantasy points.